Indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
What legislators do we have on the call?
Brian Shu.
Fred Potter.
Aaron Mullen.
And here we have Alter, Thurratella, Latimer, Nichols, Fitzpatrick, and Swackhammer, Vanetta. So pretty good representation. First item, basically, I think this whole first meeting is basically going to be, we've received a lot of information from Jack and Chris, so it's kind of a data review or a data dump. but really, it's where are we and where do we need to get to and how do we get there? That's basically how I try to lay out the agenda. So to start with,
can I just say, please use your microphone? It should all be on.
They're on.
Already. Please use the microphone to make it loud, easier, and clear. Yeah.
All right. So the first item on the agenda is basically reviewing the current operation that we've been under for 6 or 7 weeks now with the work from home orders and building closure. So, Jack, you want to lead us?
Sure. And Chris has been maintaining this information with departments. The file that you have, and I've been sent a few times since the beginning of this work status. Not much changed since we started. our on-site presence a little bit more, specifically in DFS. As compared to the first couple months or first couple weeks. But we still, you know, there's still a number of individuals that are, you know, at home, you know, on administrative leave. Most of those are sort of in the DSS council. We do have a good presence of DSS here. Obviously, this will be the first thing to change once we get into reopening. There are a backlog of with the Skype and the remote work and things like that for a while. We'll keep it posted, but obviously there's a backlog in that, but that's not going to be the rush of people into the building for my, that'll be more controlled. Third and DMV, we've all talked about there's a lot of DMV transactions that couldn't occur under the governor's executive order because they're closed to online transactions only. There are, as Jennifer had mentioned, there are no penalties, you know, for some of those things, but the biggest one is like a private sale of a vehicle. People can't turn in their plates or get new plates or things like that. Dealer work still continues. So we do have DMV staff working on dealer work. So if you go to a dealer and buy a new car, you're fine. You're going to get your stuff. But it's going to be a private sale or another transaction that can't be completed online. Permits are another thing that I'm sure you've heard of. That, you know, we're going to filing or, you know, adding, deleting, changes. So the clerk will be pretty busy, and that goes into sort of the paving plan that we're going to talk about, you know, in the next section. Finance, talk to Tammy. We have, you know, a number of installment contracts that will be coming up. Finance has done a great job keeping up with everything, but she reports that between installment contracts, we'll have, you know, more people that are going to need access to the journal entry. More of the non-critical that they have to catch up on. EAS is going to be your biggest. They've done a phenomenal job keeping up with all the emergencies, your CPS cases, your homeless cases. A lot of those types of cases, they've been doing a great job. Some of the back office functions like accounting, they've been handling everything from a critical level so that they can still bill, they can still draw down, they can meet all the requirements. There are things in accounting that need to be done. That's more of a back office, not necessarily a face to face. The big thing with face to face is there's a lot of individuals who are in temporary, who are homeless under the DSS temporary housing that will need permanent housing. So there's going to be a lot of that interaction that she reports. All the other things, CPS, all those other things that. Well, benefits people enroll. We're going to need to work on that, and that will be in the but the good news is departments will be, you know, in good shape. There, you have a lot of departments that are at 100%. So, you know, we'll keep you posted on that, but I feel personally very proud with how everyone's been flexible in handling it and keeping the business of county government going during all of this, you know, while being flexible. But there will be, you know, some backlog. Those are the main ones.
DSS under normal operations probably has the most people coming into here in each department.
Yeah.
Were they able to keep up with, other than face-to-face meetings with people, were they able to carry on with most of that stuff or interaction?
So the benefits enrollment, they report that they have been. The emergencies, they have been, but you certainly have, because the building is closed, you have had less.
Yeah.
We've had more homeless temporary housing needs that have come up. I guess we anticipated that's a big area, a big push, but they report that they've been able to be, and we received a couple of years ago that, you know, a person couldn't get fit, so they went around and one called you, and, you know, we got called up there, and, you know, we connect them to the right people, so I think we're in good shape, but that's going to be probably, in talking with Eric and Chris, you know, when we get into the phase reopening, that's going to be your biggest department of base.
Anybody have any questions on current status? What Jack just reviewed?
Just one thing. When the governor's executive order came down and cut staffing by 50%, where are we in relation to that?
On site? We're below. or below. We're somewhere between 25 and 50 if you factor in all staff. Yeah, we need that. And, you know, we might, you know, there's some counties that try to, you know, get right to 50%. We wanted to, I'll speak for myself, I wanted to be a little more conservative with it and give Eric some time to be able to get, you know, everything that he needed from a, we don't need a hot spot to break out, and then all of a sudden we have 0% on staff or on site because we have a positive case that comes through. And so, you know, we push telework as much as possible and keep up with what you can keep up with. And certainly the emergencies and all departments, we check in with them frequently. I know Chris does as well. And they report to be in good shape. So it seems like it's been working.
As far as any critical backlog that we know we're going to have to deal with, yes, this is probably the biggest concern.
Mm-hmm.
And then county clerk. And as far as tax receipts, payments, we switched to allow credit card payments with no fee. That period of, are we still?
Actually,
I can't hear you.
Sorry, but the committee is not going to waive the fee.
But it turned out to be not that
long. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. There was, there were a number, number of fees on that.
But no, we haven't seen a decline in the tax payments. I mean, we're settling with next week and the following week. And, you know, we'll see how it pays out. Because everyone's a power extended, they probably will be turning over less unpaid than previously. That remains to be seen. But we haven't seen a huge change in payments. You know, maybe we saw my tax payments, contract payments, because those tend to be people that are most in need of that kind of ability to pay small amounts. So that may be slightly less. But, you know, we used to have those processing.
Okay. Everybody is texting me saying you can't hear anything, it's garbled. You have to use your mic.
Because
it will not transfer over.
I've been the one talking mostly. Can you not hear me?
I'm just catching every other word.
I'm using the mic.
It's weird.
But that's something I have here.
Yeah.
Is the air handling?
That's way better.
And is that part of it? Is there any way to kill that air?
Yeah. We're hoping now, Hal, that you can use the mic because that when we tested it, that's what how we tested it with the mic. Okay, thanks.
I'm gonna have a workers' comp claim for my neck injury.
So.
I have a question on the DMV.
Your microphone. Oh, you're on that one. Okay, that's fine.
Are we going to try to have extra hours, or I mean, this is one of the major things that if they can't register a new car, we don't get sales taxes. We need that sales tax badly. So how are we going to?
We can definitely, we haven't talked to Judy about that. It's a good idea. We can definitely do that. I mean, once we get into this payment plan, my proposal is going to be to do appointment only for everything for at least a little while, just because we, in personal opinion, shouldn't have a pressure of people in waiting areas and
right.
You know, all of network security and other people are going to spend all their time policing that. So if we go by appointment only at least for a week or two to see how that goes, but that doesn't mean that we can't extend the hours. I mean, we have overtime, we have other things. So I can talk to Judy and Chris, and I'll talk to Judy about that.
Thank you.
I would also make the suggestion that is there any reason or if you had discussion with the county clerk about doing the drop box and then do like a private sale, they could have a drop box in front of the county building and then they could do a return by mail.
There are, some rules with that because we did talk about that. And it, so
So, but when we open and the executive order is lifted for, you know, prohibiting anything but online, that doesn't mean that we can't get more creative with the other way.
Right.
And we do, there did install the Dropbox and all those other things.
And there's going to be a certain amount of people that maybe want to be very cautious and not visit county office building even by appointment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a Dropbox would make them feel safer. It would also organize your flow through DMV as far as workload.
Yeah, okay. As long as they can get forms.
You can get forms downloaded for everything.
Not everybody gets internet. We've done that, and we've put some forms like at the security station so we can look at doing that. I mean, people would still have to come in,
yeah,
but they could just pop in, grab a form. We've done that down here.
I'm just saying that I personally had this issue, so the frustration level just keeps going up and up if you can't get certain tasks that we're used to doing accomplished.
Oh, yeah.
But as long as it's going to take longer, no doubt, but at least if you know there's an end in sight and you get your car registered,
right,
you feel that.
Yeah.
Maybe we could put the forms in other places, banks or something, or make them available in the shop.
And also, I just think we need to put, obviously, I've already done it with the other ones that are by appointment, but we need to make it easy for people to find the numbers to call,
yeah,
for certain appointments.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that can be just a banner on the first page of the county page or what.
Yeah, we could instead of a link, we could just put it on there. We could. Okay.
All right.
The problem with a Dropbox, probably 25% of the folks that go to License Bureau, you never have the right form.
You didn't fill it out.
You didn't fill it out right. So you put it in Dropbox, it's going to be mailed back, but you got to have another form.
Yeah.
It could take 2 weeks.
It does. You do run into that, Bob, but if you put out, and this is another suggestion, if the clerk or the DMV put out a bullet item, one-page listing, this form, this form, this form, and it still can be done. I've done it.
They have something like that already about different transactions. We posted it and we released
great
it, so we could update it with that, and that seemed to get some good play. People were sharing it all over Facebook. That's awesome.
And I think we need to have some flexibility on the part of the DMV staff so that they can call the individuals who might do Dropbox transactions,
mm-hmm,
and be able to straighten out any questions, that they call you directly.
Even if we had to bring in some temps to call, make that call and say, hey, you forgot to put the weight on the vehicle or something that it can be.
Because otherwise, if you don't have that call, then your only other alternative on the part of DMV staff is to return it by mail.
Right.
And say you're incomplete, and that's only going to add frustration.
I imagine it ramps it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's bad enough when you get sent to the back of the line and you're standing there.
Yeah. What like doing tech?
Do we have any idea how much the backlog is? There's no way to indicate that.
No, not really. It really is, from what I've heard, it's those private sales, non-dealer related, that's the backlog, because most of them, honestly, and it hurts us from a revenue perspective,
right,
but they can do most other things online. It's really returning plates, getting plates.
Mm-hmm.
That's my understanding.
Okay. So going on to phases of reopening.
Yeah. So we sent you, Chris and I had a department model, 25%, which in most cases, except for maybe some of your small departments, you have on site 1575, thinking that we're going to either have to or want to phase this in. Again, a caveat this all by saying, we're still waiting, and I can talk about the reopening, the broader reopening at some point if you want.
Yeah, I would start with that.
You want to start with that?
Kind of our umbrella we have to operate under.
Right? Yeah. So the broader reopening, you know, I've emailed you a
terms of, in the Finger Lakes, they appointed Bob, the governor appointed Bob Duffy in Western New York, appointed Kathy Hochul to lead this. In the southern tier, he appointed no one. So it was almost like a power vacuum of who's in charge of planning reopening. At first, they thought it was the REDC, because it goes by REDC region, so it was the Economic Development Council. So that us over to Delaware, up to the top of the Shenango. Scott and Chris and I, a couple days ago, got a call from Jamie because the REDCs and Jamie's our representative was tasked to develop what was a reopening plan, but it wasn't really a reopening plan. All the questions were about, and they were good questions, but it was more like, you know, a month out, 2 months out, business need questions. They then had their meeting to talk about opening and canceled. So Chris Moss was working with the governor's office, and it looks like the governor is accepting that the chief executive officers of the 10 county REDEC region, or REDC region, is essentially kind of the de facto reopening group, which actually probably works out better because based upon, as we know it today, and it might change at 11:30 when he does his next press briefing, because it seems to do that almost every day. There's 12 points that we have to hit. And for us, as I mentioned in my emails, we can certify, there's a lot of process questions, but we can certify in good faith that we hit all of those 12 points to be able to reopen as a region. We need much more guidance from New York State about what their expectations are, because for contact tracing, for instance, we have to have 30 per 100,000. So for us, it's 28 or 29. We have 10 currently working for public health. You know, and that's not 10 every day. It's on average 6 every day, but there's 10 people who have been doing it, and they've been managing it just fine. But we have to certify that we have 28, and Darlene has enough volunteers who are trained medical professionals who can make phone calls and do contact tracing.
Trying to get it.
Really hard time hearing.
Okay. So, so for contact tracing, we can certify that we have 28, 29, no problem. Testing, it all depends on what they expect, because at first, a couple of days ago, we thought that the expectations were going to be the ability to test 715 individuals in our 10-county region per day. We can certify easily that we have the capacity as a region to do that, and we have many calls this afternoon. We've already had a call with Guthrie. We have more coming up about partnering with them in St. James and you and Arnett to point them to do testing, because the county can't, we have 150 test kits, we can't do testing. Nor do we have the staff, but if we can help coordinate a process, and that's the discussion, can we help coordinate a process where once businesses start opening and some businesses want their essential workers to be tested, or, you know, if someone is feeling ill, that they have the ability to get tested. We're working on process, but in good faith, it sounds like thankfully they're changing their stance from we want you to actually test on average 715 people a day to do you have the capacity to do that? And the answer is yes. So the good news is, and Chris Moss is doing a great job helping organize all this. We're putting together a plan that will be submitted hopefully tomorrow to the governor's office for review, and then hopefully approval next week, which would allow us as a region to open based on, again, big caveat, what we know today that they're looking for. So I feel pretty good about that. I think we're in really good shape. There's a lot of logistics. So, you know, I talking to Scott, I thought we'd wind down the EOC to a virtual EOC starting, you know, May 18th. But there's going to be so much logistics to deal with about all these businesses reopening. That's going to be just as heavy of a logistics lift on the county, including public health and emergency services, because you're talking mass, you're talking businesses calling all day, every day, what do I need to do? And we're working on that too. we're not looking to, and I don't want to belabor all these points, so you can throw, throw something at me, but we've had discussions about, do we want businesses to submit a plan to the county? Some of the counties in our region want to see that. My view and Darlene's view, in my view, Trump's mind, but we're on the same page, is we don't have the capacity nor desire to have businesses formally submit a plan for someone to sign off, because we have so many small businesses, and how do you define that? What we are planning, and we're working, I suggested it yesterday on the call with the 10 county region, and what we're going to do is come up with a 1 or 2 page sheet from our public health departments jointly to say, here as a business, here are the things that you need to be able to hit, so that I fully expect that these pause complaints that we get, and again, all of them have turned into nothing, or there was one more serious in Corning that city cops took care of people who told, and I won't get into it, but they said, no, we're just not going to stop working, and they were told, okay, then here's your code violations and your tickets and all those things, because they were not pleasant. Everyone else has been great, or it's been nothing, but I fully expect we'll have to address those. And so to address those, one of the things that we probably would want is the business, okay, based on the guidance you have, the 1 or 2 page, you know, here's what you need to do for employee safety, you know, visitor or customer safety, you know, those sort of things that will get, you know, they have that documented, they know essentially what we're needing, and it's nothing complicated, it's basic stuff that everyone will probably be doing anyhow, but at least they know what the expectations are. I mean, I don't personally think that we have the capacity to accept nor do to accept all these plans and review them and approve them, because that'll take forever. I just personally don't think that that's a good idea. So that's where we're going from now.
But a question, would we carry any liability if we are the one that accepts and certifies someone's plan?
It's a good question, and frankly, I don't think we have the regulatory ability, unless the governor specifically puts it on us, to approve that plan. It's just in a good faith effort as a local health department, as a local government, and as the one, if there is a complaint, who would have to respond to take a look, you know, here's what you should do. And then if we find out someone's really thumbing their nose in a very blatant way, I mean, of course, it would be first a conversation with someone. But all the businesses have been good. I mean, we're getting emails. I got 10 in here right now about businesses, large and small, reaching out, hey, what do we need to do? And so we're giving them CDC, Department of Health guidance, and saying, you know, we'll have some local guidance coming soon. So,
and what about churches and organizations? Are they going to be under a different plan?
I have no idea. I got that question yesterday, and I do not know when under the governor's reopening they will be allowed to reopen, but they would. So they would generally, it would be good for sanitizing their pews, facilities, things like that. They should be doing those things, in my personal opinion. But again, there's so much that we don't know, and it's frustrating because we keep asking for it. And I know it's fluid on everyone's level, but so the good news is, again, I think we're heading in the right direction. I think we as a region are in good shape to reopen. I don't know what the next phases look like. That's one of the questions. I've heard him say 2 weeks between each phase. But again, he said things and then 2 days later at his press conference changes it. So I honestly don't know. I don't believe personally that he's looking to keep us shut down, based on everything that I'm hearing from Chris Moss, who is having direct conversations with the governor's office, that they want us to meet these criteria and get rolling on May 15th or 16th. So we're in good shape for that. I don't know how governments will be impacted. I'm assuming that we will be in the first phase to be able to reopen, just because, I mean, we provide a lot of essential services. That's how we're operating based on this staffing plan and everything. That come the 18th, that Monday, you know, we'll be moving towards our reopening plans.
If we start down phase, if we start down phase one of reopening plan, and we're part of this 10 county group, and one county develops a hotspot for whatever reason, do all the other 9 counties have to stop and step back, or?
So it depends upon based on what we've seen, how big of a hotspot. If it's a huge hotspot, it might, because so it's for hospitalizations, bed capacity, ICU beds, and new cases, it's a regional 3-day rolling average. But so if Broome County developed a huge hotspot, that might raise the level up enough where it shut, where it could trigger those circuit breakers for us all. But it would take something, it would either take multiple hotspots in multiple counties to be able to do that, to really surge the bed capacity to like where we were at the height of this here locally when beds were pretty full. But no, I don't personally, based on what we're hearing, foresee that it would be one hotspot in one county would shut it down. It's a 3-day rolling average. And that's the other thing, is there's going to be data requirements that we, the past, I don't know, 3-4 days out of the EOC have been working on about who and how are going to report this, because Chemung's IT department created a dashboard, a web-based dashboard, where we can all input our data every day, which is required. And the 3-day rolling averages are calculated so that we can show, and the governor's office would have access to that to see where our data is for hospitalizations, for ICU beds, and for new cases.
Robin?
I think my question is, I'm hearing you say that I agree that we don't want to be in a position of approving or disapproving a business plan of reopening. And I think that coming up with that short form is the best way to handle it. But having said that, am I also hearing you say that you're confident that we have enough people right now in the EOC to handle questions from businesses on reopening? I mean, this is going to be an onslaught.
There is. I think that we do, because we've actually been doing it for the past 2 weeks, too, you know, as businesses get ready. So, again, we're getting them all the time. And generally, they're pretty easy to answer, because we can refer them to, you know, what business sector you are. And CDC has guidance on different sectors and what best practices are for cleanliness and customer service and those sort of things. So, it might be busy. I mean, we might be tapping Chris or Yvonne or other resources to help answer. But so far, and we have, you know, Darlene has reviewed multiple, more large businesses, large companies in our area, their plans for reopening, and it's gone well. So, you know, it's just, okay, well, maybe have you thought about this? And, you know, it's not, we bless it. It's, yeah, this looks good, but have you thought about something else if there's a hole in it?
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the legislators on the phone have questions?
Getting back to the testing that we have.
This is Mullen. I have a couple of comments.
That's it for testing per day. You say we only have 115 test kits at this point.
So we.
My question is, how do we secure more testing?
We've been trying the state. We placed an order. I think I told you. About a week after it started, so middle, end of March, and we still haven't received those test kits. Livingston is in the same boat. We received 150 from the state. They do have some supply. So what we're really relying upon, and we still have Andy and purchasing looking, we're still trying to track down more test kits. If we can get our hands on them, we'll get them. I think the state has a pretty good stockpile. That has been held for New York City, because we're getting, I think I told you, we're getting a lot of masks. Gowns are still a problem, but we're getting a lot of masks and gloves. It's opening up a little bit. But that's why we are looking to partner with hospital systems, because they have more direct supply chains. And as long, it doesn't have to be the county certifying that we have the test kits. It's we as a county have the ability, and we can say that we do now.
Aaron, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a couple of comments. I like the plan of not approving all of the businesses. I think that's a really good idea to work it that way, but to give the guidance, I think it will help us to get reopened and also probably keep some liability away from us. And I also would like to kind of know what other people's thoughts are on it, but kind of echoing a little bit of what Gary said, I think that as a county, it would be nice if we could express to the governor's office, if other people are in agreement with us, that I think that places like churches should be able to get reopened quickly with you know, reasonable guidance, just like every other business, distancing, cleaning, that sort of thing.
Okay. What are that Cushman Wakefield information? I mean, you probably used some of that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways,
yeah, we definitely
helped.
Yeah, it was very.
As far as a nice template to give to people.
Yeah, it was very good. Scott shared a really good resource about different practices, and that's what some of the things that, you know, I shared it with staff, with Eric and Chris, and that's, you know, we're using some of those practices for us too.
Okay.
Everyone good on that? You want to get into the specific county reopening?
Yeah.
So, the staffing models that we show you are just kind of a snapshot. I don't believe that necessarily, personal opinion, and you folks set the policy, so, you know, direct us, that come May 18th, we necessarily pull the trigger and have 50% on site for all departments on May 18th. I think certainly for the ones that we're talking about, like DSS and county clerk, DMV, those sort of things that we can bring 100% back, you know, assuming that we can work with Eric on social distancing and things like that and make sure that there's spaces, DSS staff spaces, waiting room, client room, you know, we might not bring all staff back. We'd like to still, for those who can complete all of their functions via telework, and that's a best practice that you see in CDC and others. I don't personally want people, you know, sitting around doing nothing at home. You know, I want to bring the people who are on admin leave back, but if people can complete all of their tasks by telework, I'm personally comfortable with that. And it allows the other staff that can't to come off admin leave and come back in the building. So that's the direction that I personally would like to go if you folks are comfortable. So I think you know, for some of the smaller departments, we'd say, I'm thinking on May 18th, okay, start your 50% plan. For some of the smaller departments, you know, it's going to be nuanced. They have small offices. You know, they might not need or want to bring back everyone because they're kind of crammed. But to telework as much as possible, and then to really focus between DSS, Community Services is doing a lot of their sessions via telehealth, but his billing people really need to come back on site. So they're keeping up with it at home, but I think a lot of that probably needs to be done in the office. So those are, and DMV County Clerk are the ones that in the top of my mind are the three priorities that on May 18th, we bring more of those folks back on site. Yep, it was 100 and some. That was 144 folks on the phone. Couldn't hear.
That's way down from the original number, correct?
Correct, yes, it is. IT has reached out to 125 or so laptops to really bring that down.
Yeah, so a lot more telework.
Yeah, I would agree that the more people you can keep doing their job at home,
right,
better, because it gives you more flexibility here to manage the density.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have more people in the, I guess, the high need areas where we know we're going to get a lot of activity. So I think that's smart to do it. Aaron and I were talking yesterday, some of this, we've learned how to operate in a different way over the last 7 weeks, because we were forced to. Either you had to change your ways, or you weren't going to get anything done. And I think it'll be interesting to see whether the state recognizes that and realizes that there's a lot of new ways to do the same job that would increase efficiencies and make it easier on people.
especially the cap court. The way that thing has operated virtually, you know, as the sheriff has said, it has saved a lot of money and a lot of transport, and it's been a good deal. So, yes, Jen.
Court in general, you know, I made a phone call with NIDAC with the head judge, and the court in general is just opening up slowly. It's all through the site, and it's going to save if they can keep first and second appearance, especially family court, where it's not constitutionally mandated that you appear because you're not losing a right. They can keep those sites. We're going to save money on assigned counsel because we're not paying an hour before, an hour to sit before, an hour back before.
Yeah.
We save hours on the bill. So I hope they learn that lesson via some of the appearances in GCW. It's going to save a lot of money for the county and the state.
That's good.
Yep. And also, you know, internally, when I came here 12 years ago now, I came from, you know, a place where telework was, you know, promoted in a lot of cases, because IBM didn't want to pay for too much office space. So, and there's a lot of efficiencies to it. And I think that we found that we can be flexible with that, you know, from a staffing point, from a space point. I think there's a lot of different, I think it will, to your point, Scott, change the way that we operate in so many different ways, you know.
I think it's a good idea if, like Scott was saying, keep home who we can, and if they need to come in, then they call their supervisor and say, I really need to be in the office and kind of work the schedule around it.
Yep.
Kind of like you have been. I think it's been working
okay
as good as possible.
Yeah.
Perhaps it will assist with the push to get the internet in all the areas where there isn't.
That's the other thing that it showed is for us, but also for school. There's a real huge push on that now, so that's a good thing. No, so we had about a 2-week period where we were going back and forth between Empire State Development. And there are central business guidance under the governor's orders. And at one point it looked like it wasn't. So at first we shut it down. But they shut down and we shut down based on that. Then we got ready to open up and then we're told no. And finally, so there was about a 2-week period of partial or full shutdown, but they're essential. They have to do temperature checks. From security every day. They have to be masked. They have to keep social distance. Eric has done a fantastic job, and Chris helping to coordinate, and Gary Webb with making sure the contractors are safe and doing the social distancing that they need to do. So they're rolling. I mean, their substantial completion is June. So
that's not phase one.
Phase one, and we have still been doing, in the midst of all this, the design development work for phase two, and that's looking to bid at the beginning of July like we planned. Yeah.
I guess caveat or relation to Gary or John's question, what are we going to physically do differently in the buildings to reopen?
So Eric can speak a lot to that. So I'll talk about access control first, and we're already doing it, but temperature checks for all staff and residents for the foreseeable future. Again, I mean, we've seen that you don't need to have a fever to be symptomatic and able to spread, but it's a good practice because you're, according to Darlene and everything that she sees, you're more contagious when you have a fever. So we're going to be doing that. We are instituting masking in public areas. So like, you know, people going out in the corridors where you can't, you know, when this building starts moving and more people are in it, where you can't keep that 6-foot distance. So employees will be required to wear masks in public corridors. When they go back to their desks, obviously they don't have to. We've received again 40,000 surgical masks. So buildings are, buildings and grounds has it, but court security will have that for the public. so that if someone comes in, they will be handed a mask for the public corridors. So we'll continue that practice. That's not going to be, once we get more people, that's not going to be insignificant, because we got to look at the number of staff. They normally come in at 8 o'clock or 8:30 or 9, you know, so you get a crush of people. So we're working, you know, communication back and forth with our group and the sheriff about, you know, how to staff that. We bought a lot of extra thermometers, forehead thermometers, for that purpose. So they're going to have, you know, there's going to be a push on court security to be able to do the temp checks. Eric's done a lot of you might want to come up here, Eric, and talk about what you've done from a with the plexiglass and some of that other stuff.
So we put in some plexiglass and went out to gear up for the DMV with what we had in the raw materials. There's been some issues with some orders, as you guys may or not know, with some stuff that was pre-manufactured. It's a little more universal use of these fit guards. So that's one thing in one place. We have a bunch of raw material that we have to last minute to get it done. We can keep our folks safe and the public safe for this initial phasing of opening. Distancing is going to be in conjunction with security. If they come in, people being reminded, of course, everybody.
Grab that microphone on there.
That little, that puck over there.
Yeah, that
there.
Puck that's on the cord right in the middle, that'll work.
Hello? Did I know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Apologize. So back to what I was saying, as far as spit shields and so forth, for the term, like a better term, we've ordered a bunch of pre-manufactured stuff that'll work in different, our main concerns are the DMV, clerk's area, DSS. Kathy, the commissioner, has assured me she's going to control the flow of that, as Jack said, to try to maintain or to maintain the social distancing and the use of the rooms down at the interview rooms. In the time that we've been off the interview rooms, we've pulled the old carpet out, and we have all wipeable materials or solid surfaces down there now, so stuff's a little easier to clean. We've geared up and planned on cleaning staff to be roaming and maintaining any of those spaces, as well as the DMV clerk's areas, to give that constant attention, amongst other things. Then the social distancing, as we all know about and been speaking about, we've got use of stickers, placards to go on the floor to put the 6 foot away, you guys may have seen coming in the door. We can place those in the high traffic areas or as high as traffic as they're going to be. Again, that's the DMV. The folks that are going to see any public or major staff. We have enough room staffing wise in DSS, obviously, downstairs to keep people spaced accordingly, working with Kathy. So the closeness isn't there. So these are a bunch of the things we've done. We focus more of our cleaning too on the wiping down the surfaces, the consistent wiping down the surfaces. Versus stuff that we'd have normally done, maybe shampooing or vacuuming even, because the use of the building isn't where it was, you know, when we're at full capacity. So pretty much cleaning, the spit shields, the cough shields, and then the social distancing, which will be responsible to the individual as well, which a lot of people have, and then the masks and so forth.
And they've done a great job with that. And then the other things that we talk about are the high touch surfaces. So you'll see more doors propped open than before. So it knocks down the amount of times, you know, his staff has to come through and hit those with disinfectant. So we're working on those things. They've done a great job.
As far as building entry, are we going to have the same number of entry points that we've had before, or are we going to reduce them down to?
So what, and we haven't finalized the plan with the sheriff, but what I'm thinking is, especially once we start doing things by appointment with the public, and you have more people kind of at the front door, the side door, which the public can no longer access because OCA won't pay for the new magnetometer, that can be an employee entrance. And, you know, since employees don't go through the magnetometer, you can fan them out a little bit and have multiple deputies hitting that. So we probably have the same access points. It'll just look different.
Okay. And then as far as anyone going in the new building, there's no staff there currently working at.
There will. So we have been. There will be.
There will be. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we started actually around election time staffing it more, wasn't 100% staff, but now we're going to have someone there all the time.
Okay.
We talked about having procedures for outside businesses. Are we going to do the same thing for county employees
mm-hmm.
so that they know
yep.
what the procedures are?
Yep, and Nate is working. It's kind of like most of us and most of the staff in this room are working on kind of a two-page, and staff has received this. I don't know if you folks were copied in on any of those about masking, building access, expectations, things like that. We're going to have both, and a lot of it is from a personnel standpoint because there are personnel things. We ran into a couple issues of, don't need to get into, but some issues related to COVID that are concerning. And then also the other thing that we need to plan, that we're actively planning on is, if or probably more likely when we find a confirmed positive case that has been in the building, what are our response plans for that and for cleaning? So we're working on those.
Also, buildings in Corning and Hornell were public access, same thing. And we'll be like have masks there for people that want to walk into the DMV at Hornell or.
As far as the public's concerned, or as far as
yeah, we haven't thought about that. We have enough masks, so we can put them there.
Okay.
We just have to do a press release that it's there because we don't have physical staff that like security to be able to hand them out.
Because I'm assuming, maybe not correctly, but I'm assuming that the employees, if they're interacting with the public, are going to wear masks.
They've been.
I guess it's their call whether they do or not.
Well, their employees, it's actually our call.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. I think in those circumstances, like if there's a guard,
yeah.
I don't, but for some of the DSS things and when you're back, when you're within 6 feet, yes.
Okay. All right.
I see. The news, they talk about these UV lights. You know, I don't think they're great on humans, but they said at night stuff they're using in New York City on trains, you know, subways and buses and stuff. Is there anything that we might want to look at here for just making sure the buildings are alive but after in the night?
It's definitely an option. However, at this point, we're just using chemicals.
Yeah, Aaron, I have a question.
What's the duration that they have to be on in order for it to kill the bacteria?
Mm.
Yes, Aaron.
I just was
go
wondering.
Ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, as far as the people who are going to be working from home, I've got a bunch of people working from home, and it's kind of easy to where a few of them just fall through the cracks to as far as like getting updates and things like that. Do you? I'm assuming you do, but you have procedures in place for department heads getting lists of work that's being done or something like that, because I found it's very easy to miss out with my work, miss out on that.
Oh yeah. So it's. Most of those people that are working from home are either task or client-based services, so the supervisor will certainly know if they're getting that done or not.
Okay, thanks.
Do you, is anybody, we all receive this with the different percentages, does anybody have any specific questions on it, or do you want any more level of detail for Jack to mention? I mean, I think it was very comprehensive. There was, he originally sent me all the detail, and I said, let's put it into a summary page so people don't need to dig down into it. And I think it's a very good job, very clear.
Yeah, the only The only concern I had was I just wanted to make sure we're not going with the 25%, because in those cases, some people are, there's even less.
Yeah, we just wanted to show the different levels, because we're already in many cases, like you said, at 25%, we're not going to step back.
My question here is that 50% staffing city council, I'm in agreement with that, but the exception is that Jack pointed out earlier.
Any other questions before we move on to the financial information?
I would just like to say that I think we just need to try and do as best we can to put a positive spin on this, especially for the community, and communicate. So
yep.
that would be my concern, just to try and keep people upbeat and working with us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also think that it's important to stay positive. I think that if we approach this as a view for an opportunity for the telework, the opportunity for expanding our maintenance into areas where it's not available now, and a different way to provide the same services, and perhaps some of these issues might save us money.
I did have a question on the public works. Are they going to start going back to 100% quite soon?
Yeah, they're very close. So it some of it depends upon what happens with some of the executive orders, like Matilda's Law, where immune-compromised individuals are essentially directed to stay home.
Right.
And we have a few. So you might not get to a full 100%, but you'll get, we're almost there now, but you'll definitely get most of the others back. There's not going to be an insignificant amount of personnel issues to deal with this, like every business opening, about some people might be fearful of coming back into a building. Some, you know, those things that we'll have to work through, but public works will be pretty much back to full.
We're pretty much back.
Yeah, there's only a little more than a handful of people who aren't.
Yeah, I just have one more question. We've talked about the county building and the businesses, nursing homes. What is the plan for them? I'm assuming they'll stay closed.
No idea. I would assume so, based on the vulnerable population. I would expect them to be closed to visitors for the foreseeable future, but I haven't heard a formal word from the state on that.
Thank you.
All right. Financial information. We have two different packets. One that Jack sent us as far as potential budget adjustments, and then the other was Tammy sent us a couple days ago on updates as far as incomes.
As I said in my email yesterday, this is all one big caveat, because, and we should plan and have been planning all these different functions. Based on what we're hearing from the Association of Counties, the Stimulus 4.0 that would provide aid to state and local governments is gaining steam. There's competing bills, but they're all sort of heading towards the right direction that state and local governments should get money. And if we do, the projections that we've seen show us almost being made whole for revenue losses, which would be fantastic. Doesn't mean we don't take a hard look at everything else, and obviously next budget year is a whole nother story, but stay tuned on that, because if that happens, I think we can avoid the draconian sort of measures.
The one meme, I think there was an email yesterday that came out referencing those, but I guess the one option was it will be allocated to local municipalities based on if they're a CDBG.
Entitlement community.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a way to get it to us, and much more to come. Chris and I, like Jen, have a NYSEC call tonight that they're going to give more information, and we've been having calls you know, a couple times a week with NYSAC on that. Even those community development block grant revenues show us making out really well.
Okay. That's, I wasn't sure as how did that impact us.
Yeah. No, we would make out. In some cases, there were some, in one of the bills, we actually got more than we lost or projected to lose, which that'd be great, but I don't see that happening.
Is this a bill coming out of the government?
Yeah, there's competing bills in the House and Senate. Congressman Reed has been really the biggest champion in New York on this issue. He's been working directly with the Association of Counties, and he has the same view that local governments do of Albany, that if we get money, they'll find a way to take it.
Yeah.
And so specific bill, just like Senator Schumer did with the FMAP money, that really painted Albany into a corner because they couldn't then just take the FMAP money, the federal enhanced the Medicaid percentages, and keep it for themselves. So there would be specific languages, language in there not allowing subrogation or any other thing.
Tammy, you want to walk us through these? You gave us already some information on the first sales tax.
Right. And then, before everyone was here, we presented our first team that represents the city's first week of closure. And that is and as I'm keeping track of the email that they come in, it's pretty consistent for all of the counties.
You got to yell.
It's been pretty consistent across the state. Some are, you know, down to like 15% of ownership between 26 and 35%. 35 to 5, so I mean, that does include the amount that was reduced for the gain payment that came out of it. So the combination of the decline is.
They can't hear a word you are saying.
1.27
million. So that was the dollar amount difference from last May's first payment. So a decline of 1.2 million for a 2-week period of time. Yeah. But you know, we did use the NYSAC information as well. I rolled out just this morning. I rolled out what would it be if it were, you know, if we were 35% for one quarter, 25, 15, 5, and that puts us totally about 1.9 shy of budget of the budgeted sales tax number. So, you know, those are just wild guesses as far as the percentages, but at least I started at the 35 for one quarter and then dropped it to 25, 15, 5. So that's the sales tax. The mortgage tax, similarly, I did two scenarios. Again, this was based on no feedback from anybody, just me making up the numbers. You know, in a severe, it could be, you know, 443,000 compared to less severe of 252. You know, thinking that people are still probably going to buy and sell and take mortgages, but just at a lower rate than we had last year. Interest, I feel, is much more of a guess, just because the calculations are a little more difficult because, you know, it's based on our cash flow as well as the percentages. I did drop that down to I think my first estimate was slightly higher than 750,000, but I dropped it down to 750,000 to refine that a little bit. If we don't have the auction at all, the foreclosure auction, that's been on average about 380,000 a year. I took that back to 2015 to get that average. So if we aren't able to have that, that's another, call it 400,000.
What drives whether we can have that or not and when?
Probably the courts more than anything.
Oh, okay.
At this point in time, they still aren't allowing default judgments. They aren't allowing default judgments, so I am monitoring that for Tammy's hat every time a new one comes out. And
then when that happens, and they allow it, there's going to be time frame that it's going to sit, like 30 days, because they're afraid people are not going to respond because they're afraid to come out.
Right.
So that's the driving force at this point. July sale is looking nearly impossible.
We've kind of said not July. It's never going to happen in July, but perhaps, if we're lucky, September, October. It would have to be done on a weekend because school would be back in session, so we wouldn't have access to the gym, you know, to the auditorium during the week. So, but lots of counties do have them on a Saturday just because they get more people that way.
Right.
So.
And the other thing that's going to affect is money. People not working, businesses failing, and so on. Who's going to be out there to the auctions at this during this 2020 year?
Yeah.
That's the other question.
Right.
We've talked about.
Will we get much less?
We'll be able to do it.
Yep. And just yesterday and the day before, I've done a little bit of work with the actual departmental, some of the departmental information that I was prepping for the NYSEC survey. We took a look yesterday at mental health, well, community services, I should say. And I kind of did the same thing. They had a 43% decline so far, you know, March and April together. So that was a $257,000 drop just for that period in billable units. They're working, it's a work in progress because the state is coming out with new billing modalities, if you will. So they can do shorter contact visits. They can do them on the phone, they can do them telemed. We're not set up, I guess, to do visual quite yet. But I did 40% for May, June, and 30% for June, and 20% for July, thinking we would be back, you know, pretty good by July. The sum of that is like $680,000.
How much of that is county dollars?
Oh, that's all county. Yeah, that's billings to Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance for contact business. DMV, now maybe we'll get some of this money back, but I suspect some of it will be lost forever. I did an estimate based on, you know, comparing this year to last year so far, and that would be, again, through June, about $300,000. Again, I did a declining, you know, it's going to ramp up, and hopefully eventually get back to normal. County clerk fees, they had for March only a 5% reduction, and April it was 23. So I did 20% for May and 15% for June, and that amounts to 63,000. So that one's not so bad.
So that's probably driven more on the fact no real estate transactions are occurring.
Probably, or, you know, a lot of the filings that are getting, you know, potentially, I don't know the details. I just have the gross numbers. I don't know what, you know,
okay.
Other things that would normally be filed that are not judgments,
right.
In addition to these mortgages, but.
Okay.
So that's all of the updated stuff that I pulled together for revenue. There's also gaming, but we don't get a whole lot of funds from OTB, so I don't think that's going to be a ton. And we haven't received the tribal payments.
We're still waiting on
the
Seneca settlement.
Yeah. You know, we have money in the budget. We've had money in the budget the last 2 years, but we haven't received it. So, you know, if and when we ever get that money, it probably will be reduced. But since we haven't received any, I didn't really pull that into the picture.
As far as the adjustments.
So the adjustments, Chris has done a fantastic job pulling this together, working with the departments. Again, as Scott referred to it, it's almost like we talk about levers. There's some things that are more easily cut and some things where there would be a lot of pain either for the departments or for, you know, services that you folks as legislators might want to, you know, ensure keep going. You can see them. I won't go, you know, line by line. This is certainly only the beginning. There are many other funded vacant positions that we could not would not fill. There are other actions that we can take, but these are more of kind of your contractuals. You can see that, you know, a lot of your small departments, I mean, we cut them pretty close for like printing and training and conferences and things like that. So, you know, I don't know if anyone's going to be going to a conference this in person this year. So some of those things, I mean, you're going to get a few thousand dollars here and there from each department for that. But these are sort of the bigger ticket items that we wanted to put in front of you.
So kind of, I mean, the low hanging fruit obviously is DPW as far as I see it.
The question is
how much pain is associated with that. I was surprised that they aren't going to hire summer help for flaggers, because I've also gotten concerns from people at the Keaton shop that work that say those flaggers save us a lot of time because we can run equipment and trucks.
And we told them, Chris can talk to because I think he's had more direct conversations too, but we didn't say give up summer help. We said, you know, if you can reduce it at some places, like up at the landfill with manpower, with some of the mobile work and things like that, there are things that can be done, but I completely agree on the flag.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's not completely tough, so there's still something in that line item.
Okay. Anyone have any questions on the list of potential adjustments we're going to have to make or we can make?
I don't have any questions on that. If we looked at revenues, a reduction in revenues, I've looked at the department under my committee sitting out there, what the first three quarters were. There's been some reduction in expenses, so I'm just looking at what the offset is.
Yeah,
and so there's a few things that impact this. So if stimulus 4.0 passes, that would probably stop the state from having to trigger their cuts that we're expecting. NYSAC says we'll probably get them like the news dumps on Friday evening, because the governor, as Scott mentioned on the call the other day, the governor has to provide his estimated cuts to the legislature essentially this week. So it will probably be Friday. Those are sort of the trigger points. Obviously, if we don't get the stimulus and we keep bleeding revenue, that's when, you know, we come back to you folks and say, okay, here, we think we need to push this button. We need to push that button and cut accordingly. I think it's a little too early until we get those estimated cuts from the governor. We know what we're losing in sales tax and others, you know, to a certain extent, but not knowing if we're going to get filled with backfilled from the feds or what's coming down from the state, you know,
right.
I think probably, you know, next month or in the next, well, certainly we'll know in the next few weeks, you know.
I guess my only question, again, I'll go back to DPW, because it is where you have the biggest levers that you can pull. Is there anything around timing that affects our ability to still move forward with these projects if we hold off for a while? To wait until we have clarity.
There probably is. I would say, you know, some of the, like the first one, you know, remove County Route 6. You know, Vince has a very good plan that he shared with Chris and I about, you know, and he shared with Public Works the other day about, you know, if the CHIPS money doesn't come in, I think the CHIPS money will come in, but if the CHIPS money doesn't, he can reduce and not blacktop and do chip seal and things like that. I think if we get into July, we would have problems personally. I think next month, especially like you mentioned for DPW, is sort of be like the go, no go on that.
Because I assume there's some contractual obligations you have to make with the soup coats of the world.
June, July, and August are your three hot months. That's the problem been sometimes is that when so much asphalt's been going on, taking loads and so on, we're not able to get all the material that we need to do the jobs with.
Yeah.
Because we're in line with with all the other highway departments contracts.
And with the prices.
With the oil prices where they are.
Oil prices.
That's
yeah.
if there's a saving grace in this, we'll you know, for DPW it's that.
Yeah.
That we'll that, I mean, they're, you know, if we have to do these cuts, or, you know, they still, with the oil prices, be able to get a good amount of work.
But with Public Works, the other thing is, Gary mentioned to me, you basically got June through September pay, and then the temperature turns against you, you can't, can't do it, because it doesn't appear, then it'll heal up.
I think in the next, what NYSAC is saying is if by Memorial Day, and they're thinking even before that, they're thinking in the next 2 weeks, if feds don't pass the stimulus, that it's not going to happen. So we will have a good understanding then, and then by, you know, next week at the latest, we'll have an understanding of what the proposed state cuts are and if the legislature acts to change those. So I think, you know, we'll have in the next few weeks, certainly within the next 3 weeks, we'll have our arms around sort of exactly where we are.
Tammy, when is the next sales tax report?
When's the next receipt?
The next sales tax report for the quarter. When is that?
We won't receive that until.
No, when will we just know the information, not so much receive it?
Well, she kind of knows based on the receipts that she gets every 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So every 2 weeks we receive another payment. So we can certainly keep that piece updated.
But if we see a big drop, we won't know it for 2 weeks, correct?
Well, the 2 weeks, yes. It would be a 2 week. I think, I hope, this is the beginning of, I mean, this, the payment we received today was for the end of March, so after the closure had kicked
in. Yeah, so there's a five or six week delay in the payment receipt versus when it's applied from or represents.
Right.
So we're not going to know what the effect of these 8 weeks are.
For six more weeks. We know
for
the first
4 weeks.
Yes.
Right.
So we'd be into basically July.
Yeah. What she did with the payment she received today is kind of extrapolates that if that is representative of the first or the last weeks of March, then we're looking at a 35% drop.
Yeah.
For that, hopefully, that 35% drop only goes for 8 weeks or 10. And then, you know, it picks back up.
Yeah, NYSAC, their worst case scenario was 20% total for the year.
And that would probably work out with a reopen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I would think that July would be a retuning week for the budget. A good time to look at income and outgoing up to the month of July.
Yeah.
And then really sit down and we'll have some figures anyways.
Yep.
The other thing is still going to fill the sales tax is the drop in oil.
Right.
Yeah, we get 17% of our sales tax from motor fuel, and there's a lot of truckers still running, you know, goods and stuff like that, but most of us aren't driving all over the country.
People aren't driving like they were.
No, and the price dropped. Yeah, so that's even in good times, that would be a hit.
And automobiles, another big one.
Yeah, back to the highway. The CHIPS money that we get and also the heavy winter funding, whatever that's called, that's about $2 million. So it seemed to me that we need to at least spend that much money in order to, because we can't carry it over.
No, we have to.
So we need to spend that much money up front to make sure that we get that reimbursement if it becomes available.
Yeah.
Well, he'd almost have to do the cuts
like when we get them tomorrow from the governors to really cut the CHIPS funding. He'd pretty much have to because everyone's going to be doing their road projects. He'd have to put them in there.
Sure.
Not that he couldn't do something different, but it would make sense. Probably I shouldn't try to make sense out of any of this, but. So we should know pretty quick about that.
I just have one more question about budget adjustments. Under public health, it shows the preschool program, $108,000. What does that mean?
No preschool.
None at all.
Yeah, BOCES has canceled the summer learning experience.
Yeah.
We know that, and I haven't heard a formal announcement from for preschool for summer school. I fully expect that it will be. So the net savings of the preschool is just, I was speaking summer school, my apologies. The preschool is just because it's been shut down and transportation savings. So that's the net saving. Sorry. Do you want to discuss other levers related to collective bargaining and executive session?
Yeah, we'll hold those and do it in there. We all received the email from, I remember her name now, this morning.
Oh, Kelly Dixon?
Yeah, I forwarded it to Jack and Brenda and Amanda because they weren't on the emails.
I know Kelly.
But I responded back to her, thanked her for the letter, and told her that we would add it to the minutes of our meeting today because I think it was a very well-written, plea for let's get back to as normal as we can be because it's going to help the kids as much as anything.
Okay.
As far as future meeting, do we want to do this a month from now? Because we're going to have better indication from the state. We're going to be reopened for a couple weeks, and it would give us a good status update.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Okay. So we would probably stick with the same Thursday morning, the first Thursday morning of June, whatever day that is, at 9 o'clock. June 4th. Okay. Secondly, what's the group's opinion on when do we start having our meetings in person?
You have to wait
that after June?
Yeah.
We have to wait for the governor on that. There's still an executive order that's in place until May 15th that suspends the open meetings law as well as we can continue using this and now that we have it set up. So I'll keep you posted on that. If he doesn't renew it, then open meetings law is open and we have to do it. I don't know what he's going to do. Like Jack, every day we have to roll with the punches and see.
Yeah.
So that's the 15th and our meeting's on the 18th.
Hopefully,
we have an answer before the
15th.
Okay.
Gary. With this budget, what's the latest date that we could put this, if we have to apply it?
There is no latest date.
How is it going to affect the department if we put all this savings, I guess you want to call it, and in the last quarter, they're really going to be hurting, aren't they? Wouldn't we have to adjust?
Well, I would think they're already starting to cut back, and they're saying that they can commit to this amount by the end of the year by not doing certain things and reducing their expenses, and we either take that at the end of the year, or if things turn around, we get unexpected aid. They don't need to have those.
Then maybe we fill positions and things like that.
Yeah, but can we tell them
that all this came from the departments already?
Yeah, where the numbers came from. It's what they offered up.
So they're doing it without us.
Yeah.
Well,
other than DPW.
But also, like the sheriff's, those are pretty, not filling some of those vacancies and not doing some of those things could have an impact on services. The extra road patrol car, quite frankly, should be replaced, but in a time where we really need to cut, it can wait, but you got one that's out there with higher maintenance costs and things like that. So I would say a number of the sheriff's things would not be without pain. There's some of the smaller things would be fine, but there's others that would come with pain, like people.
Are they going to do it without an authorization from?
No. Do the cuts. I think they're in holding pattern until a decision is made. So they're not going to spend the funds. Well, we'll see. And they certainly can't fill vacancies without our signature.
Yeah. Under the sheriff, the salary and wages, or under the jail, $125,000 salaries and wages. How do you do that?
That's estimating attrition for COs.
Oh, okay.
And not filling.
And, but there's a minimum staffing level, so.
Yep, so we had to keep with that.
We must also be estimating a reduced population.
Or, yes, and, we did, yeah, and also, there have been, since this started, and I think there was one in March and one in April, that I might have been one of the persons, people that switched over, but another one left, and we just haven't replaced it.
Okay. Because on the sheriff's side, we've actually seen an increase in overtime during this process, right? Because
mm-hmm.
they've been assisting public health.
Mm-hmm. For the sheriff, yes.
I was looking at that question, Sheriff. He's telling me that there's several items in that overtime that are really not related to the deputies. So, is that true? Other things are charged to that category? I don't know, these deputies that are used for municipal government, are we showing that as overtime in that category? He's telling me there's other things in that category except overtime for his department.
No, we'd have to talk to them. So it might be overtime for the, like for North Cornell that was approved, but there would be associated revenue for that. And then he has been running overtime, especially on the weekends, doing helping public health with the daily checks, and that would be FEMA reimbursed later on.
So. There's just anticipated revenue.
Yes.
So at this time, Jack, you don't need anything from the legislature body?
No, I just think there's too many unknowns to take. I mean, we're not filling vacancies right now, so we're already functionally doing something to reduce expenses. But I think without knowing what the feds do or the state does, I think it's almost premature. It's good to have you folks get information and think about it, but no, I think it's just more information.
Just making sure.
Yep.
You're asking an opinion about one which is start having committee meetings. Person, I'm in favor of doing that next month.
Starting in June, if we're allowed to. I agree. I'm the same, same opinion.
If we can.
My dog has heard more committee county business than he needs to hear. All right. As far as the regular session, are there any other questions? Anybody on the phone that has any questions? Okay, then I would entertain a motion to adjourn and we will reconvene under executive session.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, can give us enough time to get everything situated.
Oh, there you go.
Right.
Then I got 10 to
go. So we want to start.
Go with the 10:05.
Yeah, well, let's start at 10:40.
10:40, okay.
That's when the executive session phone call will start.
Perfect.
All right, motion to adjourn. Gary, second by Bobby, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you.
Oh, we're back here.